Case is taken under advisement. Our next case for argument this morning is Sherman against Illinois.
Good morning. Thank you, Judge Easterbrook, members of the panel. My name is Dmitry Feofanov. I represent Rob Sherman. As you know, this case involves a grant of $20,000 by the state of Illinois for repairs of a very large...
Do you understand the uncertainty about whether this money has been spent yet? Is it crossed and repaired, or what?
Yes, Judge Posner. The record, as it stands now, has conflicting evidence as to whether it was repaired. I think realistically, we can probably assume, although it is not in the record, that it has. Which means that from this point on, since people in Springfield read opinions of this court, the modus operandi would be the moment the case is filed, spend the money and get off scot-free.
But how can one resist that outcome in light of the combined effect of this court's eventual ruling in Leskowski and the Supreme Court's decision in Hine? One has to take the messages that are being sent, and judicial enforcement of these kinds of things doesn't really seem to be the model that the Supreme Court has authorized.
Well, it was great difficulty. I think...
we can't really tell the Supreme Court they were wrong.
No, obviously not. Obviously not. I think though, there is a big distinction, at least as far as we are concerned, in light of the fact that it was potentially intentionally surreptitious, the grant, and also
they always are. I mean, that was the whole point of the distinction between legislative actions that were right there in the face of the legislation and executive department actions that are inherently able to be swept under the rug if somebody wants to do that. And the Supreme Court opted for a rule saying it's got to be in the legislation. And I don't see it anywhere in this legislation.
Right. Absolutely, absolutely right, Judge Wood. And here's the problem. I understand the argument. And the state's argument is, hey, it's legislative. And their argument is pretty much form over substance, because they
say...
As is
the Supreme Court. I mean, what I don't understand, actually, I mean, I think these are very interesting questions. I don't in any way fault you for wanting to raise them, but it seems to me you could spend 2 minutes in this court and just say you're preserving your right to see if the authority that can do something about it is so inclined and ask them.
But
I don't know what we can do.
But it was legislative. That wasn't the...
Not the legislation. It wasn't legislative. It was people from the General Assembly. I mean, you have the legislation in your appendix, and it doesn't say a word about it. It says the sum of $5 million for all sorts of purposes, profit organizations, not-for-profit organizations, and so on and so forth.
Right. And then there was an extraneous piece of paper, which a reasonable inference is came from them.
That's not an enrolled bill.
Your argument is that we should be realistic about legislation. We should understand that legislatures, because they control the money, they exert a lot of influence on executive and regulatory agencies. The problem with that argument is that it would be a pretty unmanageable inquiry for courts to try to figure out what was the real source of this decision to spend this money. Was it really an executive decision, and the legislature had really said, yeah, it's discretionary money, do with it what you want? Or had they whispered, to the executive, of our legislature. Legislators has this little earmark authority. It's not written anywhere, but you know, and we know, and you have to listen to this guy, right? How are we going to deal with those issues?
That is a big problem. But they did more than whisper.
It's insuperable.
But they did more than whisper.
Because it would be very insulting. I mean, here the courts are saying, look, we're going to be realistic about this. We know that these legislators do a lot of, you know, extra legal legislating. They threaten executive branch officials. It's kind of extortion. We're not supposed to be that candid.
They've jingleized them, even. You remember that phrase, surely.
No, I do not.
When John Dingell was chairman of a House committee, he would call members of the legislature and browbeat them in public and embarrass them until they did what he wanted, even though you couldn't find anything in the legislation that was supporting this dingleizing treatment. Your theory is that somebody handing out money in the state executive branch has been dingleized.
More than that, there is a piece of paper. Now, it is true.
Dingell's hearings were recorded, and there's a transcript.
Sure, but I don't think that was quite the same way as sending a piece of paper saying
but
this is how
too,
you...
It's too nebulous, because if we took the step you want, then the next argument would say, well, why are we insisting on a scrap of paper, right? That's totally arbitrary.
Well, sure, and at a certain point...
But then you never end. You never end the investigation into the power relations between different branches of government, which the courts would feel awkward with that.
I appreciate the difficulty, and obviously at a certain point of that continuum, there has to be an off.
But where's that point?
Beyond this case.
Pardon?
Beyond this case, obviously. Because, our argument is in a 12b1 and 12b6 context and the standards of review.
I don't see how you can say, well, 12b1 allows us to depart from the principle that what happens in a legislature is that both houses of the legislature have to agree and the governor has to sign the bill, or it's not legislation. Right? It's something else. It's influence, it's browbeating, it's right, but if it's not something in the text of the statute and signed by the governor, it's not legislation. I mean, that's a straightforward rule, and I don't see how you can say, well, we've pleaded otherwise, and therefore you have to treat it as otherwise.
Well, I think you have the power, Your Honor, to look beyond the form into the substance.
I'm not sure we do, to tell you the truth, because if you look at Hein, it is talking about legislation, and legislation doesn't include committee reports. Legislation doesn't include other scraps of paper. It doesn't include speeches that people make, either in front of TV cameras or on the floor of the General Assembly or otherwise. Legislation is a term of art in the law, and if it's legislation, then that's fine, but... And there is legislation that actually puts the earmarks right there in the legislation, both at the state and the federal level. And so it's not that the set is zero in which there will be legislation, but your case is one where you say the legislation does something, but then one should be able to go look at the legislation, see whether it mentions the Bald Knob Cross or Friends of the Cross or anybody, and you take a look at it and you don't see a word about that. And
admittedly,
under the regime the Supreme Court has established, it seems to me that's the end of it. They could change their minds. They could say, you know, we'd like Establishment Clause cases to be brought again by taxpayers because of executive action. I mean, that's in their power. I don't think anyone thinks there's no adversity and so on. The court has decided it's just too generalized a grievance. I think. I mean, that's the way I read the case anyway.
And it's a reasonable reading. No question. No.
Is there any other reasonable reading? Not that mine has to be the only one, but I don't.
I think there is a broad common law principle of not allowing the form to prevail over substance. Here, we have a substance of, and I understand your point Your Honor, about the term of art, and perhaps then perhaps that means that the term of art needs to be expanded in light of the circumstances. But what we have here,
but then you run into the problem.
Is obviously not concerned with form and substance, because it's saying basically the executive branch can establish a religion in the United States, right? The legislature can't do it. Executive branch can do it.
Apparently, okay. So.
So, I don't think the Supreme Court is sensitive to the concerns that you've expressed.
Well, that may be so. I don't know what their concern is, other than with respect to what they put on paper. I am admittedly making a very fine, or attempting to make a very fine distinction, because to our unaided eye, it was a legislative act, not executive. Because otherwise, what's going to happen is, here's $10 million, spend it whichever way you like. Oh, by the way, $10,000 of that in a side letter has to go to such and such project.
But under Hine, if Congress is controlled by the same party as the president, then the president can establish a church. And that would be exactly what Congress would do if it were permitted, right? So it's really the end of the FLAST principle, right?
You would think so, except they didn't exactly overturn.
This would be much more difficult because this is, here you're not asking whether the government is supporting a religion. It is. What you're doing is asking how the legislature influences the executive branch and have to somehow determine some forbidden quantum of influence. Can't be it all. So I think it's workable or consistent with the spirit of mine.
I think the alternative consideration that should be is whether it's consistent with the spirit of the First Amendment. And the hypotheticals that you raised, Your Honor, national church established by the president, I think it would raise huge issues which are, I don't think we fully understand.
But it would be a legislative act.
That's right.
If it's just using discretionary funds, no earmarks.
I don't think it would be.
There are provisions of the Constitution that probably aren't enforceable, right? Well, it's legally enforceable. That's in the end of the world.
If they're not, they should be.
Well, I don't know. Courts can't do everything.
I assume this means that I should.
That's your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Turner.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am Christopher Turner, Illinois Assistant Attorney General, here on behalf of the defendants, appellees, Patrick Quinn, Warren Ribley, and Jack Levin.
Are you not representing the state of Illinois?
Well, the state of Illinois never appeared in the case, Your Honor. So, and neither, it was not served or appeared.
Against it.
Excuse me?
So a default judgment has been entered against the state?
It wasn't
served. What usually happens when a defendant doesn't appear.
I'm not even aware that it was served, Your Honor. The department as well.
Mr. Sherman couldn't find it. Couldn't find it in this jurisdiction.
Your Honor, I believe it was dismissed from the case, as all defendants were dismissed in the final judgment.
Yes. Well, all the defendants were dismissed in the final judgment, and a notice of appeal is filed with respect to all the defendants. It doesn't notice of appeal, I don't think, says we're appealing with respect to Quinn only.
And I will point out that the magistrate judge's report and recommendation recommends, actually it's the first thing it mentions, that the state of Illinois' motion to dismiss be granted, the Friends of the Cross motion to dismiss be granted, et cetera. And then the district court, it's just a page. It just adopts the magistrate judge's report. So I think you probably are representing the state of Illinois, which hopefully isn't too onerous for you.
No, Your Honor. The only reason we hadn't signed it because they had never appeared in the case, Your Honor.
Okay.
Because they weren't served. However, as you've As I pointed out, there is no taxpayer standing in this case because under Hine...
Well, I have a more important question.
Yes, Your Honor.
I don't think this church is the... I don't think this cross is the tallest cross in the Western Church.
Yes, Your Honor.
The tallest cross is in St. Augustine.
Yes, Your Honor, I'm not... I don't have
so
those
what
facts.
Effingham? What's going on with Effingham, right? Is this some gigantic fraud? Little Effingham... The only thing it has going for it, it's kind of Nowheresville, is its false claim to have the highest cross in the world.
No, I have to take exception to that, Judge Posner, because you pass through Effingham every time you drive from Chicago to Texas.
How does it compare with the giant statue of Paul Bunyan outside Minneapolis?
Your Honors, as you point out, the Supreme Court in Hine...
Oh, wait a second. Mm-hmm. Isn't it true that the cross in St. Augustine is higher?
I'm not aware, Your Honor, unfortunately.
I think this is something you want to take up with the governor.
The cross outside Mayor Rio de Janeiro is probably much higher.
It's probably much higher. But, you know, I actually have one favor to ask of you, which is that nobody... defend this on the basis that the cross isn't a religious thing and that it's really just for tourism. We might as well recognize a huge, if not the second largest Latin cross as a religious symbol.
Your Honor, we don't have to reach the question of whether or not it's a religious symbol or whether it's tourist or an economic center.
Is this some mystery whether a Latin cross is a religious symbol?
Well, for purposes of our motion to dismiss, we'll assume that's the case. I mean, we are assuming his claim.
I don't think you're out on a limb, I'll just say.
What else could it be? Well, you say it's sort of a marker for airplanes. Or?
Yeah, they say it's a marker for airplanes and a tourist attraction.
I believe that was the basis of the grant, Your Honor, that for the tourism money and the economic development for the city. However, as you pointed out, under Hine, the Supreme Court drew a bright line. It made a decision that the FLAST exception is narrow, that it applies only to the formal exercise of the legislative power and only to specific legislative appropriations.
That's what three justices said. You're asking us to assume that what three justices said is actually the governing rule.
Well, Your Honor, in this Nicholson decision, this Court recognized that it was the governing rule because there was a plurality
The plurality was the dissent. There were four justices in dissent, three justices in the lead opinion, and two justices who thought that the lead opinion was a bunch of hogwash.
Well, they concurred in the result, though, Your Honor. And in particular, though, they had a stronger position. They believed that they should simply overrule the FLAST exception entirely, and there should be no taxpayer standing.
So the only difference was it on life support, or was it actually, should it have been pronounced, you know, dead? And so from that point of view, yes, they were quite in disagreement, and two of them thought that there was no need to continue with this. But it hasn't happened yet. I understand.
Correct, Your Honor. And the decision that is of the court that said that though drew in order to retain the FLAST exception drew a bright line around it for only formal legislative action, only statutory appropriations or express statutory mandates. And in particular, they even expressly rejected the type of political informal earmarking that Mr. Sherman wants to rely on here.
So do you agree with your opponent that the money has been spent?
The money has been dispersed from. Actually, the complaint itself alleges incorrectly that the money has been dispersed to the Friends of the Cross, and the Friends of the Cross have also spent the money as well. Correct, Your Honor.
So it's been repaired.
I don't know the status of the cross.
I know the Friends of the Cross had raised other money as well. They have the money.
So they had the money, they put in a CD, and you think, based on extra record information, that it's been spent, but you don't know if Friends of the Cross decided to go on a nice retreat in Colorado or whether they spent it on refurbishing the cross or anything else.
Well, it was actually in the Friends of the Cross had submitted the record, the evidence, with their motion. They had an alternative motion for summary judgment in which they also provided the documentation that they had spent the money and had submitted records to the state. Recording that fact and confirming
that they spent the money on the repair.
On the repair, correct, on panels for the cross.
But I think they have to raise additional money. They don't.
No, I know that they have raised additional money. That the $20,000 was not the only money that was spent on the cross.
Small amount. So it's all it's repaired now.
I do not know your
honor.
However, the Hine has rejected the specific theory that Mr. Sherman would like to establish taxpayer standing on here. That is, it decided that it was only could be the formal legislative exercise of the power and would leave other challenges to the Establishment Clause, to executive branch discretionary expenditures, to the same sort of challenges we have for every other constitutional provision.
Such an odd rule, because imagine if we did this for the free speech clause of the First Amendment. We said only if Congress passes a law requiring all books to be reviewed by a board of censors has the free speech requirement been violated. But if the executive branch sets up a board of censors, you know, let's say in the Department of Commerce, then that's fine. You know, nobody can complain about that. I mean, think of how absurd that is.
Well, Your Honor, that isn't though exactly what is going on here. There's a general constitutional prohibition.
In that case, there are no taxpayers standing in either event. The person who's being censored would have standing in both cases.
Correct, Your Honor. That is the point. That with other constitutional provisions, we don't have any taxpayer standing at all. It's only with the Establishment Clause that there's been any taxpayer standing.
So would you agree that there's standing if somebody has to drive past this cross every time they go home to Texas?
I can't concede in a particular case, but yes, there are, like for instance, in the Gonzales case.
Our St. Charles case was that case.
Yeah.
It was a cross, and the atheist was unhappy driving past it. But now Sherman, doesn't he live in Effingham?
I don't know, Your Honor, where he resides.
But apparently not. There are no atheists in Effingham.
Right. But that's the point, Your Honor. It's still left.
A non-taxpayer claim here.
Correct.
But there could be. The next case that you have may take a page from this oral argument and realize that the theory needs to change.
Correct, Your Honor. There is a possibility. So if any time the executive branch does engage in the act which might violate the Establishment Clause, there still is a check on it. In addition to the fact that they also themselves still are obligated to follow the Establishment Clause, they can still be subject to lawsuits by directly injured plaintiffs who have a personal injury rather than taxpayer standing. Indeed, if in order to take the opposite rule and not draw the bright line around the taxpayer standing that the Hine did, and you left it possible for a plaintiff to establish their taxpayer standing through informal earmarking, you even double and compound the federalism problems, because how will the district courts apply that? What level of political leverage are they going to have to come up with for each case? And not only that, but who's going to have to exercise that political influence? Will it have to be a constitutional majority of the legislature? Will it be a faction, the ruling party, or as Mr. Sherman claims, an individual senator had facilitated the grant?
So Mr. Turner, I'm going to just agree with you that in a state like Illinois, you have really described a nightmare. The number of different ways in which influence might be exercised.
Correct, Your Honor. And then how would Mr. Sherman go about proving that?
Of course. Courts deal with issues of equivalent complexity, but they don't want to deal with this one, right?
They don't. Not
the Supreme Court doesn't want to deal. Not that it couldn't. It would be a burden, obviously. Look at the burdens that the courts have assumed in a zillion different areas, but they don't want to assume this burden.
There is both a practical challenge, but in addition, there is also the principles of federalism as well, is when the court is going in and trying to make the decision about whether or not this influence constitutes actual legislative power versus something else.
The federal government prosecutes a lot of politicians in Illinois for improper use of influence.
Correct, Your Honor. When that is the violation of the law, but here no one's arguing that the alleged influence itself is a violation of the Constitution. They're saying that somehow will approve the standing to pursue it.
Constitution. There are federal laws against corruption, bribery, and so on.
Is it altogether clear? I mean, do we know whether a prosecution under Section 242 would be possible? And if you take the legislator who on this allegation violated the First Amendment, couldn't he be criminally prosecuted under 18 U.S.C. Section 242?
Not that I'm aware. I don't know, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
You know anything about Section 242?
No, I don't, Your Honor.
Well,
it's the criminal counterpart to 1983.
However, Your Honors, based on that bright line that has been that the Supreme Court drew in Hine, this case, Mr. Sherman's case should be dismissed, just as the complaint was in Hine. Your Honor, with regard to the, unless you have any questions with regard to the other alternative grounds for dismissal, the mootness of the case and the bar under the 11th Amendment, we'd like to rest on the brief for that with regard to those.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Your Honor. And for the reasons set forth here in our opening brief, we ask that you affirm the judgment in favor of all defendants.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Doherty.
Represent Friends of the Cross, and given the curiosity and the humor surrounding the cross, I hesitate to stand up here, but yes, it is a Latin cross. It is 111 feet tall, Your Honor. I don't know if it's taller than the one in St. Augustine.
Well, I think the one in St. Augustine is 260 feet tall.
Well, it's far short of that.
As tall.
My understanding is it's on the Bald Knob Mountain, and it's the second highest point in southern Illinois.
It's pretty flat down there, though. maybe you're taking advantage of elevation above sea level to bootstrap.
You would put a 1 millimeter cross on the top of Mount Everest and say that was the tallest cross in the world.
And it would be, and from a certain point of view.
In a different...
Until an astronaut took one up.
I guess I hesitate to stand here, but I wasn't involved, and I guess there is some puffing going on in the publicity materials. The question is, was this money spent? This money was spent. We did file an alternative Rule 56 motion. We provided counsel for the plaintiff with documentation the money was spent. This grant had expired. The grant expired on 3/31 of 2010. The money was spent on 3/23 of 2010. Part of the record was to supply the court with a receipt from the metal manufacturer who was involved in manufacturing the panels to be replaced on the cross. This project was a renovation that involved almost $500,000 in money.
How much?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
How much money?
About $500,000.
Was it in danger of, collapsing or?
There were missing panels. It looked kind of ugly from the pictures I've seen. It had been built.
Was there some sense it was dangerous or could collapse?
I don't know if the panels were blown off in the wind. It looked bad, and it was no longer the tourist draw, I think, that they hoped it would be. I think the lighting has not been repaired. Their intention is to light it up now that they've got it fixed and they get some more money. But only $20,000 of this $500,000 project is at issue. And, we're talking about now, once the case against the state is moot, if he even had standing at all, I look at the last opinion in Laskowski, and I don't see where he has standing to sue the private grantee for restitution, as Your Honor suggested in the second Laskowski opinion. I think after the final Laskowski opinion, this is pretty cut and dried, and there is no standing that Mr. Sherman has to sue my client. I'm getting lights here, so I only reserve 3 minutes. If you don't have any questions for me, I would ask that you affirm the lower court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, counsel?
Thank you, Judge Easterbrook. Well, I would love to address the lemon issue. After all, I'm Chicago lemon law. I know my lemons. And it mm-hmm. would be very interesting to find out whether the primary purpose was advancement of religion or tourism.
Suppose you prevailed in this case. Could they just sell the cross to a private company, which would...
it belongs to a private company. They can do it. I think it belongs to a private party. I think they can sell
it
to...
It's on private land, I believe. It's on private land,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really visible from the I-57.
Sure. Private property.
I see. There is not...
No, and with respect to your point, Judge Posner, regarding the other bigger cross, yeah, the only difference is there is no $20,000 of tax money involved.
Let me Let me ask a slightly different question. Suppose Congress appropriated money to build an even higher cross, and it was built, and then a court held it was unconstitutional. So could the government then sell the cross to a private entity, or would it have to destroy it?
I'm vaguely remembering instances of that kind that came through appellate courts. I think they just transferred the property. From what I vaguely remember, the property was transferred to a private entity, and the constitutional violation was basically
that
alleviated.
Would cure the violation?
Because I believe...
Well, that's what the Supreme Court held a couple of years ago in connection with a cross in California.
That must be it.
The Circuit has since entered an opinion disagreeing with the Supreme Court and enjoining the cross and requiring its destruction.
Well, I think the Ninth Circuit probably will be reversed on that one.
One might predict that something will happen in that case.
Yeah, one might. But unless we do something about the situation in hand, off to the establishment of national church by the executive branch we go. Mr. Madison would not be happy.
But would you have any objection if the state simply had a program of appropriating money for dilapidated structures?
Yes, depends on what structures they are. I mean, the dilapidated structure could be a church.
Dangerous conditions.
Right, a dilapidated structure could be a church.
Then they wouldn't have to exclude church.
I think that would raise certain First Amendment concerns if they just say, okay, dilapidated structure.
So you think the state has to exclude churches from fire protection as well? They can stop fires in private buildings, but not stop fires in churches. I think we've been through this.
No. I think I will revise my answer. I think if it's a neutral grant for dilapidated everything and it happens
to be...
See,
it's part of the complexity of this inquiry that you want us to make, because it's possible that here's poor little Effingham. Its only claim to fame, although it didn't pass Judge Wood, is that it's at the intersection of two... interstate highways, but it has this cross, and maybe the money is being given not because of any enthusiasm for religion, but just that
tourism.
It's the only tourist attraction for hundreds of miles around, and also the airplanes use it as a marker. So then we'd have to disentangle that motive, that sort of innocent motive. From religious...
As the Lemon test requires, we'd be happy to address that in a fact-finding setting, what the primary purpose would be. I think the answer will be kind of expected. But that is not to say that the tourism argument is not legitimate. I don't think it would qualify as a primary, though.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Judge.
The case is taken under advisement.